Most people do not understand Northern Ireland. Why should they? There are many such places of controversy and turmoil in the world, from Kashmir to the Crimea. In the space of this short segment, I will not attempt the challenge of explaining the entire troubled historiography of this disputatious isle, but will instead discuss the recent news regarding the Northern Ireland Protocol. This treaty is arguably a blight on Northern Ireland that was imposed upon Britain by the EU during exit negotiations and may at last be scrapped. However, unfortunately, mainstream media across the world appears to have swallowed the EU narrative on what's actually going on in this part of the UK. Joe Biden's America is not least among the forces which are determined to implement a one-sided and mendacious interpretation of the Good Friday Agreement in order to sabotage their supposed ally. Mm-hmm. And if we go here, so Liz Truss tells the EU we have no choice but to rip up Northern Ireland Protocol. Joe Biden prepares to send envoy to Northern Ireland.
Joe Biden's got the annoying American affliction of claiming ancestry to a place he's never lived. Mm-hmm. It's just like he talks about how he's Irish while sounding American, looking American, acting American, although to be fair, I'm sorry, other Americans that didn't vote for him. Mm. I know. He's not a real American, but still, compared to us.
He may not be an American, but he's certainly not an Irishman.
That's true, yes. Yeah. And of course, he is a Catholic as well, which is...
Well, he's a pro-abortion Catholic, which is not a very good thing now. Yeah. Goodness me. Anyway, so Liz Truss has told the European Union that Britain has no choice but to unilaterally revoke parts of the Northern Ireland Brexit deal after Brussels ruled out further concessions. In a call today between the Foreign Secretary and Maros Sefcovic, the chief EU negotiator, Truss said that the situation in Northern Ireland had become a matter of internal peace and security and the government had no choice but to act. So to put this in context... There is basically a trade barrier between UK and Northern Ireland, despite the fact that
it's the same country.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It was a ridiculous arrangement, which many people were outraged at, but it was basically the cost that Boris Johnson paid because Theresa May had more or less imposed it on him during her tenure so that he could get out of the Brexit question and into the rest of his premiership. And then COVID happened. So Truss's comments paved the way for Boris Johnson to announce next week that the UK will move to legislate overriding significant parts of the protocol. This is likely to involve a bill excluding goods destined for Northern Ireland from being checked in the Irish Sea.
Good.
So goods which will go to the Republic of Ireland will still be checked in the Irish Sea by the sounds of it. So it's not a complete solution, but it's a major solution. To give an example of the problems this was causing, I think there was a period when Amazon was just not delivering in Northern Ireland because it had to pay delivery charges twice and things like this.
It's just absurd. It's unnecessary bureaucracy that's punitive on behalf of the EU against us for leaving.
Exactly.
It?
This legislation will also end the role of the European Court of Justice in policing the protocol and allow companies in the province to choose whether they follow UK or EU regulatory standards. So this is another thing. I can't imagine why Theresa May signed this, the absolute quisling. But they appointed the European Court of Justice as the arbiter of the deal between the EU and the UK. It's a bit like appointing Alex Ferguson the referee if you're playing against Manchester United. It's absolutely ludicrous. Anyway, the US obviously has to stick its oar in. So President Biden is on the verge of appointing a special US envoy to Northern Ireland because of growing concern in Washington about the British plans to revoke the deal. How about you? You wind your neck in. That's a good British phrase that our Americans could learn. You know, keep your nose in your own business and stop stirring up trouble in places that you don't understand and don't really care about, just to spite your allies anyway.
That could be said of the US, to be fair.
Yeah. In a letter to Truss last night, two senior US congressmen warned the government that the move was in direct confrontation with the wishes of the majority of elected officials. Oh, so they're warning us about what we do in our own country. Great. In the Northern Ireland Assembly. They said that Antony Blinken, the US Secretary of State, had made clear that the White House believed it needed its own envoy on the ground in Northern Ireland, which, as they put it, was in line with our historical role as a good faith arbiter.
Historic role as a good faith arbiter. How can they say that?
I know. What play are they reading? What fan fiction is this? Ugh. Like, with friends like the USA, who needs enemies?
Oh, dear.
And as always, Daniel Hannan, who's originally from Northern Ireland, I believe, I may be mistaken, has a really good take on this. And he has an article here, "A Vindictive EU is Stirring Trouble in Northern Ireland." And he just explains in very basic short terms, targeted at the Americans, what is and is not the case with the deal of the Northern Ireland Protocol. Mm-hmm. So let's get into it.
He is, of course, one of my favourite members of the House of Lords as well.
Yes, I agree. I really like his take on Brexit, especially. The rest of the world has largely made up its mind about the Northern Ireland Protocol, the arrangement that the European Union demanded as the price of Brexit. The story, for most overseas observers, goes something like this. Quote, Britain promised under the original peace deal to keep the Irish border open. Because leaving the EU means having a different customs and regulatory regime, there has to be a border somewhere. In order to preserve the peace in Ireland, the EU insisted that Northern Ireland be treated for regulatory purposes as part of its own market, meaning that checks on goods take place between Great Britain and Northern Ireland rather than between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. Now, Boris Johnson is trying to renege on the deal.
Well, rightly so.
That's not the right interpretation of the Good Friday Agreement, for example. It's just a lie, basically propagated by the EU. There was no agreement that there must be no border between Northern and Southern Ireland. And he gets into it. I'll let him speak for me because he's significantly more eloquent when it comes to writing. I recognise how embedded that narrative is, especially in the United States, the commentators of which, however Anglophile in other respects, are primed to side against Britain in any Irish context. Still, every element of it is false. And it's never ceased to amaze me the depths to which the US State Department will sink in order to screw over Britain and its people.
Well, British history is basically a history of the United States deliberately and willfully stabbing us in the back at every given opportunity to extract money, resources, and power out of us. And it's quite frankly appalling.
But in no case is that more stark than the Irish question. So Hannan proceeds to set the facts straight. First, there is already a border in Ireland. It was imposed in 1921 by the Provisional Government in Dublin, in defiance of London, the preference of which at that moment was for some kind of all-Ireland polity loosely linked to Britain. In recent years, that border has been made unobtrusive. But there has always been a demarcation of jurisdiction with different taxes and regulations on either side, and that's for 101 years now. Second, the settlement that governs relations between the UK and Ireland, the 1998 Belfast Agreement, also known as the Good Friday Agreement, does not commit either side to keep the border open. Checks at the border have in fact been ordered twice since it was signed, in 2001 during a foot and mouth outbreak, and in 2020 during the lockdown, both times by Dublin, not London.
So yes, it's not even that the Republic of Ireland wants, you know, open borders with Northern Ireland. They're quite often the ones imposing it, unlike the EU is trying to make
out. But it's like the Americans have this narrative that we, Britain, are this grand evil empire lording it over the poor Irish. They don't seem to understand that Northern Ireland actually wants to remain in the Union as a majority. And they don't understand that this scenario does not match that story they have in their heads at all.
Well, it's the desire to view the outside world, the world outside of America, of being made up of good guys and bad guys. I mean, Ronald Reagan used to use those terms explicitly when talking about international politics.
So critics could do worse, he says, than to read the Belfast Agreement. Although it has nothing to say about borders, it has a lot to say about consent. Among other things, it lays down that for as long as Northern Irish voters choose to be in the UK, major constitutional issues should require the approval of both communities. And let's just bring up the Belfast Agreement here. An agreement reached at the multi-party talks, and if we go to the contents, it's a fairly dry document. I read it in preparation for this segment, and it's not that useful without the context, so I'm going to give the context here, just a brief summary. So this agreement was a treaty between Britain and the Republic of Ireland, designed to put an end to terrorist attacks against Britain and anti-terrorism operations in Northern Ireland, which were known as the Troubles. The challenge was to placate both sides of the sectarian conflict in Northern Ireland. So broadly speaking, we have pro-British, pro-Union Protestants, who made up the majority of the population, and anti-British Irish Catholics, some of whom, a small minority, had been involved in waging a terror campaign, a literal terrorism campaign, mm-hmm. to force Northern Ireland to secede from Britain and join the Republic of Ireland.
Well, there were a number of bombs found in London, weren't there?
Yes, many. The promises that this treaty made placated the IRA and Sinn Féin on the Catholic side by essentially promising continued plebiscites on Northern Ireland leaving Britain and joining the Republic if and when sentiment for doing so arises. This concession was not particularly popular with the Protestant majority, who accepted the treaty generally in exchange for an end to the years of violence and terrorism that had plagued the region, on the understanding that the union with Britain would continue unaltered and that there would be an economic continuity with the south of the island, at least in the short to medium term, and for some of them, preferably forever. Let's go to the next page. This is the list of bombings during the Troubles, and they say here there were at least 10,000 bomb attacks between 1968 and 1998.
That's absurd, isn't it?
Yeah, like this is what we were dealing with. This is the scenario that the treaty was designed to stop. It's mad. Like, and there were also assassinations. This is just bombings. They did a lot more than just bomb.
Mm.
So, you know, this was a serious issue, a serious treaty to solve a serious problem. And I think it's irresponsible to wade into the Northern Ireland conflict without at least reading up on it, which is what many Americans seem to do. But let's return to the Daniel Hannan article. The Northern Ireland Protocol destroys that principle of consent by establishing a border between Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK. Quite apart from the economic costs, Northern Ireland sells more to Great Britain than to Ireland, the rest of the EU, and the rest of the world combined. Unionists see it as a threat to their British identity and a breach of the consent principle, a broken promise. As long as the protocol remains in place, unionists will not participate in the power-sharing institutions, which makes the basis of the Belfast Agreement void. David Trimble, who won the Nobel Peace Prize as the co-author of the Belfast Agreement, keeps explaining that far from guaranteeing it, the Northern Ireland Protocol wrecks it. And if we go to this one here, I feel betrayed by the Northern Ireland Protocol, which rips out the heart of the 1998 Belfast Agreement. It's pretty strong words. And well,
yeah,
everyone
it's not
is
unwarranted,
ignoring
yeah.
Everyone is ignoring him.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's politically expedient to do so, isn't it?
Exactly. Like, they're not on camera. No one cares about Northern Ireland. No one talks about it. Just let it bubble away in the background. Meanwhile, the EU is using it as a pressure point to try and rip out a part of Britain, which wants to remain part of Britain. Meanwhile, America is sticking its oar in favour of the EU again, and no one seems to care about it. It's maddening.
I know. Well, I definitely care about it. I mean, it's a part of Britain other than England that doesn't actively hate the English for a start, or
right.
at least
yeah.
a majority of it. I know Scotland and Wales are pretty anti-English when it comes to a lot of things.
But there are a lot of family ties as well between Britain and Northern Ireland. It's not like it's
well,
some
I've got,
far-flung colony.
I've got some Northern Irish heritage in me through my Scottish side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So, and I know many people, many Scots actually, who do have that strong shared kinship connection with Northern Ireland. So he continues, third, the protocol was intended to be temporary. You know, any inconvenience that's temporary is never temporary. The EU insisted on it as an insurance policy in case there was no trade deal with the UK. But such a trade deal has now been signed, the most comprehensive between the EU and any non-applicant state. Fourth, the protocol is causing needless economic problems. The EU, which has still not overcome its peak about Brexit, carries out fully 20% of its checks on goods entering its territory on the less than 0.5% of goods that cross from Great Britain into Northern Ireland. So it's saying they spend more time checking goods coming in via Great Britain than from anywhere else.
Yes, and that's obviously
malicious.
Yes, because of course our goods and our standards and our legal standards enforced on our goods are usually, as you say, better than those of the EU.
They're going to be better than, say, Serbia as well, which is a comparable place, or say Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
We're probably going to have better standards. In fact, sometimes, as you say, our standards are stricter than the EU's. it has been calculatedly vindictive, at one stage insisting that pets from England and Scotland carry certificates for rabies, a disease long eradicated in Britain, though not from the EU. You see what I mean? When I say this is vindictive, I'm not making this up. After a year of fruitless discussions, the UK now intends to disapply the most harmful aspects of the protocol, an action anticipated within the protocol itself. So I must admit, the attitude which the US and its media are taking towards mediating international law in Ireland seems very similar to its one-sided foreign policy in other parts of the world. So let's just talk about Russia and Ukraine in the 2010s, as that's a topical issue. Now, I'm not saying that any of the parties concerned are remotely comparable, apart from the US, but the fact that the US has appointed itself as a biased referee, and everyone knows it, is what we need to look at here. So in Ukraine, the US's long-term and calculated ignorance of Ukrainian infringements of the Minsk agreements did help to set the stage for the first major war in Europe since 1945. In Northern Ireland, the US is poised to set itself up as a defender of the EU's global project as a way of undermining Britain. And you might think that's somewhat conspiratorial, but I bring up this foreign policy memo from the United States from 2017, in fact, just to give some context on US foreign policy. Quote, "The liberal idealist Wilsonian view of foreign policy is that other countries, including US allies, should be pressed to adopt democratic reforms and human rights practices in accordance with American preferences. The realist view is that America's allies should be supported rather than badgered for both practical and principled reasons, and that while the United States should certainly stand as moral example, our diplomacy with other countries should focus primarily on their foreign policy behaviour rather than on their domestic practices as such. Both views are deeply rooted in the US experience. Both are authentically American. Their relative urgency tends to wax and wane over time, depending on events overseas." Now, you notice both of these traditional US foreign policy views assume that America is just better than everyone else, more advanced than everyone else, that the American model and the American democratic values will just work everywhere else, and that every other country should be judged by the yardstick of how close it is to America.
Well, I mean, that was evidenced by the fact that they tried to export democracy to Iraq and...
or Afghanistan.
Yes, and they just weren't really interested. And they're like, why would they not be interested?
Yeah, why don't they want to learn about transgender rights and the binary and special pronouns and things in Afghanistan? Why are they not taking to this like ducks to water? Yeah, exactly. And you also notice that it's universalist, not particularist. So there's no appreciation of, maybe they do things differently in Iraq, Afghanistan. Maybe they do things differently in Europe or Britain, with countries with long histories and settled institutions. No, they come along with the all-eradicating sweep of universalist Americanism to try and rebuild these countries according to their model, which is not exactly perfect. But just to reinforce the point I make about them applying the law, the international law, selectively, let's read this closing paragraph. "One useful guideline for a realistic and successful foreign policy is that allies should be treated differently and better than adversaries." I agree. "Otherwise, we end up with more adversaries and fewer allies." It's not rocket science, is it? "The classic dilemma of balancing ideals and interests is with regards to America's allies. In relation to our competitors, there is far less of a dilemma. We do not look to bolster America's adversaries overseas. We look to pressure, compete with, and outmaneuver them." And when I read this, I sort of wonder, are we in the ally or the adversary category, well, as far as America's concerned?
Sure feels like the latter.
"For this reason, we should consider human rights as an important issue in regard to US relations with China, Russia, North Korea, and Iran." You notice that's quite selective. It's like, they're the only places it matters. And this is not only because of moral concern for practices inside those countries, it is also because pressing those regimes on human rights is one way to impose costs, apply counter-pressure, and regain the initiative from them strategically. And I honestly think that's what's going on in Northern Ireland. They are imposing costs, applying counter-pressure, and attempting to claim the initiative strategically.
Over an ally.
Yes. But this is the thing. It is self-awarely selective on when international law is supported and when it is not. Mm-hmm. So they are posing themselves in the role of the referee, the arbiter, the, what was it they said, good faith arbiter. And yet they know full well they're just going to go in, and if they will only blow the whistle on fouls by one side.
Yes, absolutely.
Back to Northern Ireland. Hannan continues, fifth, this protocol was done briefly in January 2021 by the EU from no higher motive than irritation because Britain's vaccine rollout was going more quickly than its own. Do you remember that?
I do, yeah.
It's a massive PR embarrassment for the EU that we were faster than them at rolling out vaccines.
Not only that, but them doing this in Northern Ireland was actually very unpopular within a lot of the member states of the EU.
Including Ireland.
Yes.
The Republic of Ireland. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they did it just out of petulance, basically.
Oh, absolutely.
The European Commission sought to ban the export of vaccines and briefly ordered that a border be imposed in Ireland to stop them escaping. The border being the very thing the protocol was notionally supposed to prevent. This is another EU thing you notice a lot. There is some notion that the law is supposed to do one thing, and what it does in practice is completely different. It's almost like each piece of legislation has its own PR team. Britain could have reacted in kind, but it chose to keep talking. 16 months on, the talks have got nowhere. Johnson now proposes to take proportional action to defend the prosperity and stability of Northern Ireland while meeting the EU's stated objective of ensuring that no unauthorised goods cross the border. That's where we are.
If you appreciated that segment from the podcast of the Lotus Eaters, you can go to lotuseaters.com to get access to all the premium content we have on the site, such as the book clubs that we do, this one being with Andy Ngo in the studio, in which we went through his book, Unmasked, Inside Antifa's Plan to Destroy Democracy. And if you want to follow what else is going out, you can follow him on Getter, for example, at Mr. Andy Ngo on Getter. Thank you and goodbye.